And right now, we are talking strength and conditioning with two of the best in the province and in the country, Paolo Pacioni. He does a ton of work for the CSA and the OSA. And Richard Bucciarelli, he is the president of Soccer Fitness. Guys, welcome to Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Thank you for having us.
It is my pleasure. Guys, you came back from Japan at the World Congress, and it was a conference on science and football, and it was a lot of great things that took place there. Richard, we'll start with you first. This is a conference that I would assume is year after year that is being held there, and it is participated by a ton of people from all over the world. Tell us about what this conference was all about and what you took from it.
Well, it's every 4 years, and it's held in the year after the World Cup. So in terms of soccer-specific sports science, it's the biggest basically the biggest conference in the world. It brings together researchers, practitioners, some coaches, athletic therapists, all different sort of people that work in soccer and in sports science together. Pretty much the best from all over the world.
So, Paolo, you guys were over there and you were there to present a piece you were telling me on strength and conditioning. What did you exactly do when you got over there? And how did it feel standing up in front of all these people from all over the world in your line of work, in your field of work, and you were up there presenting this? It must have felt awesome.
Well, it was incredible. There were more than 500 participants there from North America. Unfortunately, there were only four of us, two being Richard and myself from Canada. But our research was looking at the speed profiles of our female athletes and looking at with our national team players, me being with the U17 Women's National Team, and looking at our provincial players and looking at the identification process with regards to their speed.
What kind of information did you compile, Paolo? What did you look at when you were putting this all together?
So what we found was that the athletes that ended up making the national team, because we looked at the athletes that did and didn't make the national team that were all in our center. The ones that made the national team, we found that at the youngest of ages, U14, when we first got them, they were already faster than the ones that didn't end up making the national team.
How come? Why is that?
So it's not so much of a why, how come. We're looking at it, that's what happened, and we're looking at to see if that's a pattern in the next few years.
Interesting. Very interesting. Richard, talk about when you guys were over there. There must have been a lot of people that after you did your presentation, you did all this, that wanted to tap into your minds, yourselves and Paolo's, and ask you, you know, how you came about this information. What can we do in our part of our country to bring it to this level as well?
I would say anytime you go to a conference like this, one of the advantages and one of the positives that comes out of it is sharing knowledge. So we did get a lot of questions from people. The study that we presented was a pilot study. The total number of players that we looked at was quite small. So one of the, I would say that the big things that's going to come out of it is that there's more, let's say, more years and more data and more players that we need to put into this study to really come out with a conclusive argument about it. And also, you know, I think looking at what other people have done in other parts of the world, looking at female players and speed profiles, the same type of research, will help us to come to a more definitive conclusion.
Now, before I go ahead, I meant to ask you both gentlemen, how is the beautiful country of Japan? Are they recovering? Are the people getting back to normal life, everyday things? Because that country of Japan, as we all know, is very successful in whatever they put their mind to, not only sports, but conditioning, fitness, you name it, business. How are they doing, Paolo?
It's fantastic over there. I mean, the hospitality was number one. I've been all over the world, and the humility of the people. We did not see any of the damage, of course. But in discussions with people, they would not even talk about it. You know, there was a sense of pride and honor, and they did everything possible to make us have a great day.
Yeah, something that, I mean, they were the most hospitable people in the world, not just the ones in the Congress who were great and they were great hosts, but everybody. From the moment we got off the plane at the airport, and we had no idea where we were going, and people stopped. They went out of their way to help us and show us where to go, show us where to buy our tickets.
And bank cards weren't working.
this is great. The beautiful country of Japan that everyone knows worldwide. And that's why our hearts were all broken at that time, what happened, that tragedy. And so it's great to hear from you two firsthand that you've seen with your own eyes. Things are starting to get back to normal. That is great. Richard, talk to me about, there was a lot of different people there from all over the world. We live in a country that is a cold climate country. And a lot of times the athletes here, Paulo and Richard, have to train a lot of times indoors, where now you're seeing a ton of facilities being built indoors for the athletes to train. Where would you see the countries of South America, Central America, where their climate is much better, their training tactics compared to ours? And how could you, you know, help one another with both?
Well, I think in terms of training tactics, I mean, you have to be prepared for the climate in which you live in and what you do. So if we're not able to train in the cold, then we're training indoor. And, you know, obviously the temperatures are controlled in there. So there's certain things that we can do. We can obviously push our athletes a lot more indoors than at certain times outdoor. But you know what? Honestly, there are several other countries that have a similar climate to Canada. I mean, Scandinavia, for example, they have to deal with colder winters and a longer portion of their season is indoor as well. So the big thing, I think, is just to be prepared for the particular climate that you're working with. And also, and maybe Paulo can touch on this too, is being prepared for where you're going to be traveling to, especially at the higher levels. If you're going to be, you know, if we're in a cold climate, but, you know, we may be competing in a World Cup tournament or a qualification game or something that's in a different climate than ours. So,
that is a great point, yeah. Paulo. At high altitude, a lot of men's World Cup qualifying games take place. How do you train the men or the women in situations like this where it is in high altitude or even in situations where the humidity, the heat is excruciating? How do you go about changing their training tactics?
There's many ways about going to acclimatize. That's what it would be referred to. We do a lot of studying beforehand as sports scientists. We look at weather patterns, rain, humidity, altitude, like you mentioned, and we steer our training and our training programs based on those factors. So, for example, altitude, we need to be there a certain time in advance. I mean, if we're there too early or too late, there's significant differences in effect.
Interesting. Richard, talk about when you were there at this conference, a lot of presentations were made, as you were telling me. What other things did you learn that you took from that maybe you can start incorporating in your own way of training your athletes, whether athletes in hockey or in soccer?
A couple of things that really stood out to me are some new methods, not necessarily new methods, but some unique things that I saw that can be used to monitor intensity of training. I think that's something as fitness coaches that we really need to be aware of is exactly how hard are we pushing our athletes? What is the intensity that they're working at? Are they training hard enough? Are they recovering well enough? Are they, you know, could they maybe be doing more, or are we pushing them too hard and do we maybe need to back off? Monitoring training using methods such as heart rate monitors, GPS. There was a great presentation that we saw from a guy from Spain that showed a specific training intervention that was used with a player that they were doing a lot of small-sided games. And this was a very technical player that wasn't very fit and was able to hide in a small-sided game. And so this particular fitness coach used a training intervention that was not soccer specific. It was more of a running training program, but it was able to get this player back to a fitness level that he needed to be at. And, you know, interesting things like that with monitoring training.
These are solid, great points. I love listening to this, Richard. Now, Paulo, expand a bit upon that. Do we push our athletes here enough? Sometimes I walk around on the soccer fields, the baseball diamonds, and the hockey rinks, and I think we don't push our kids enough, especially when it comes to training when they're not playing games, to the highest level. I think sometimes we baby them too much, and it's okay to not push them to where we think they could really get to.
What happens here is we don't know enough. We don't know enough for the athletes because there is a failure to implement sports science within all of our sports, especially at the younger levels and the academy levels as well. And that study that Richard was describing was a 15-year-old athlete who eventually became a national team player in the senior national team. If we do not do the interventions or do not get the information out of the athletes on a daily basis with regards to heart rate monitors, even asking the simple questions, asking them to rate their training session, looking at their hydration, we cannot make the recommendations or make the programming changes that we need to do.
Paulo, speaking of other countries, and Richard, I notice a lot of times from the country of Russia or Ukraine or the Scandinavian countries, I've yet to see many athletes or young youth that are are not physically in shape. But here in our country and in our province, let's be honest, too many youth, too many of the youngsters are not in shape. And they're sitting down in front of that TV, that video game, and they're not properly, you know, using their time to their advantage and getting in shape. How come these countries like Russia, Scandinavian countries, are in tip-top shape? I see a lot of them, and they're just chiseled.
Sorry, Richard. Yeah. What I was going to say, especially when it comes to the Scandinavian countries, it's a cultural thing. Yeah. You know, you see the parents in shape. You see the parents bicycling all over the place. And last time I was on, I mentioned that. It's a cultural thing, and what happens is we need to be good examples as adults towards the kids. You know, I can't expect my son or daughter to be in shape unless, you know, I've shown them the way.
Yeah, that's a great point, Richard.
I actually, along the same lines as what Paulo was saying, physical activity has to be part of the culture. And I think some of these countries that you're mentioning, it's a bigger part of the culture than it is here in Canada. And in the end, it all comes down to the training load. How much physical activity, how much exercise are you getting?
Yeah, but Richard, we've already cut gym classes in Paulo out of the public school system, the Catholic school system in this province and in this country. I used to love going to school to just attend gym class because we would play so many different sports. Today, it's an option. And many times we see parents sending in notes when maybe that gym class is a little bit strenuous that little Johnny and Susie aren't going to come today because they're running a 1 kilometer run, for example. That's unacceptable, Richard.
Absolutely. As I said, I mean, training load, if it's not high enough, then we're really not going to, over the years, develop young athletes that are going to be physically capable to compete at the highest levels with, you know, international athletes that are training a lot more.
Yeah. What do we need to do today, Paulo, to really instill in our youth at a young age, maybe as early as, let's say, 7 or 8 years of old age, to get them properly in shape and in fit so they can carry it on for a lifetime, not just if they want to become an athlete or not, but just for a lifetime?
Well, you touched upon it when it comes to school and programs. I mean, there needs to be more programming to unstructured training and unstructured play. And there isn't that opportunity. I mean, growing up, for sure, Richard and I, we played outside. We stayed out in all hours, or even stayed after school and hung out at the schoolyard and, you know, kicked the ball around or threw a ball around. More and more, that's not happening. Now it's all about structured. I mean, kids are getting personal trainers at a young age, and that's not necessarily the fix.
That's a great point you brought up, Paulo. And that's the phenomenon today, Richard, is a lot of people today want to get one-on-one personal trainers. And I have no issue with that. That is something that if the parents can afford that, great on them to do it. But what if you can't afford it? Do you really think there's many other ways that these kids can train on their own?
There absolutely are several different ways that kids can train on their own. And I think Paulo had mentioned that, you know, if we're talking about structured versus unstructured, in the end, especially with young athletes and young children, unstructured physical activity will be more effective. You get much more of an overall benefit to the child and to the athlete to do something that's unstructured. They don't feel that there's any pressure on them to attend or to necessarily compete and excel. It's just more of a fun and enjoyable type thing, and it makes physical activity enjoyable. And in the end, if it's enjoyable, they're more likely to continue to do it. They're not pressured to do it.
That's a great point, Paulo. Today, in today's world, how much does this new technology, this computer age that we live in, playing a part in strength and conditioning in the athlete?
Well, obviously, we can see that it impedes, but we got to stress the importance of that unstructured training and allowing your son and daughter to play on their own or giving them some room to go work and play in the backyard. And there was a study, there's a gentleman who presented all about this, and he was with a premiership club in England. And what they looked at was players who became professionals. What was the difference throughout their youth? Of course, all these players belong to the academy, but some went on to professional careers and some didn't. And what they ended up finding was the athletes that did more training on their own, kicking the ball against the wall, playing street football, were the ones that became professionals. And they showed those players actually were training 4 hours more a week than the other ones in that unstructured environment. And that's what made the difference.
And it was the unstructured hours that caused them to accumulate more total hours. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Because they were all part of the same academy, and so they were getting all the same amount of structured time.
So
So that was really interesting to see that.
And this is great too. So what I'm hearing from you two gentlemen, again, is less structure, more freedom for the kids out there to let them just go out, as you're saying, Paulo, continuously, let them go kick the ball. Let them go out with the hockey stick outside with the ball hockey and just pass it around. Get some bicycles and go out bicycling. Leave them alone. Let them express themselves and let that energy flow freely. Am I right, Richard?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, there's something called the 10,000-hour rule, which means that if you want to become a master or an expert in any particular task or technique or sport, it requires 10,000 hours. And if you do the math, it's going to be very difficult, you know, for a young athlete to accumulate, let's say, 1,000 hours a year in structured physical activity. Very difficult to do. So you'd need about half and half.
Fascinating.
500 structured, 500 unstructured.
Richard Bucciarelli of Soccer Fitness and Paolo Pacioni, who has trained a ton of guys with the men's national team and the women's and at the OSA provincially. Now, guys, something we were talking about off the break is how closely, Richard, do you work with the coaches, with the athletes that you are training? Are you in contact continuously? Do you get some coaches that really could care less of what you're trying to do? Do you need more respect from coaches to understand what you guys are trying to do?
I would say, if you're asking me, it depends in what capacity. So I do work with the York University men's and women's teams.
National champions, I might add.
Men's national champions last year and the women OUA champions in 2009. In that capacity, I am working very closely with the coaches and obviously there's more support that I could be given and I could have maybe more of an impact if I was working more with them, but that's a pretty effective way to do it. With my business with Soccer Fitness, I don't have as much contact with coaches. I'm probably dealing a little bit more with parents, and if I do deal with coaches, I would say I'm there isn't as much of a cohesiveness there. And I think definitely that there's something to be said for the importance of that.
You brought up the parents. That's interesting, Richard, because I was a parent and watched my son grow through a lot of times through your program. And you see some parents that are very antsy, nervous, getting almost scared to a point that when they see their child that is training with you or others, they're pushing them and pushing them and pushing them. How do you go about, you know, calming the parent down to say, look, They got it in them to get to this next level. You're paying us because this is what we're trying to do to help your son or daughter to elevate their game in their sport. How do you go about easing their concerns?
Well, I would say that, you know, I mean, it comes down to the commitment and the attitude of the player. So if it's a young athlete that tells me that they want to get to a certain level, you know, I'll outline for them exactly what I can provide to help them do that and what commitments are required on their part. And if they're prepared to do that and to make that commitment, then great. Then I'm happy to work with them. And that's really what we're trying to talk about here is we're talking about elite high performance. Those are the athletes that I want to be working with, and the ones that are dedicated and committed to succeed.
Absolutely. So, those are the athletes also, Paulo, you're trying to help and mold and guide. But, Paulo, a lot of times gentlemen like yourself aren't given the due respect. By that is many times the coaches and other people in the sports industry really don't understand what a vital part you gentlemen play, because that athlete has to be ready.
Well, that's not always the case, because if you look at examples outside of Canada and the U.S., especially in Europe and South America, the fitness coach is the right hand to the coach. Mm. And that trust relationship is what's going to determine whether you're going to be able to do a successful job as a fitness coach or not. And a prime example for myself is a coach I work with, and Rafael Carvajal. He lets me do what I need to do because he trusts what I do. If he didn't trust what I did, then it wouldn't work out.
So he gives you free rein to do as you do because he trusts you and he understands what needs to be done in a specific situation or a game situation. Will he come over to you and say, look, I don't think this player is physically fit. Do you think, Paulo, he is? And you would give him your response.
Well, of course, because we've worked professionally outside of the country and that model, that's how it works. You know, the fitness coach and the coach have these discussions. The coach raises those concerns. And it's my job to address those concerns and provide the information with solid, solid information. And not just, you know, empirical knowledge, but using the science, using the heart rate monitors, using the GPS, using the medical staff. And that's how we get the job done.
And that is all elite things that you just mentioned. And Richard, you talk about training the elite athlete. The elite athlete, in my opinion, needs the best equipment, the best fields. And sometimes the best fields aren't the ones that are out there for the kids that are training, you know, at the highest level. Do you recommend in any situation, whatever the sport might be, that they need to train on the nice Kentucky grass, like a carpet, or that hockey ice rink that is no bumps on it at all? Because you want to train the elite athlete with elite surfaces and facilities.
I agree. Surfaces and facilities will definitely have an impact on the development of the athlete, but we also have to be realistic. And you know, I mean, the majority of young athletes, soccer players in Canada, are playing on fields that are just not well maintained. We've got a lot of rain. We don't have good weather. You know, field turf fields are useful in those cases, and even indoor facilities are useful. I think we need to maybe look past that a bit and make do with what we have. You know, and we need to also consider who we're competing against. I mean, and even in our own, in CONCACAF, you know, we're competing against some countries that have trouble even growing grass.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, but in some of those CONCACAF countries, Richard and Paula, you can comment on this. They train in 30 plus degree, you know, conditions. Here, we tend to, when it's 30 degrees plus, we say, well, no, let's train right away first thing in the morning when it's not that hot, or late at night. Should we not then be taking their recipe, Paulo, and training right in the middle of the day, because you're going to have to play in those countries, in those situations where it is that type of weather?
Well, if you don't have the staff or the medical support to do these things, then you might run yourself risks. Where those countries, although they may not seem to be sophisticated, they do have certain aspects done in a sophisticated manner.
Richard, talk a little bit about today in the world of the young athlete, the young player, the young boy, the young girl. Many times you really have to have their attention for them to continuously want to work and get to that next level. And if you don't make it, as you said, interesting, fun, thought-provoking, they're not going to really want to bring it to that next level. You've got to take a lot of tricks out of your bag there to keep them interested and keep them wanting to get to that next level, because mom and dad are shelling out a lot of money.
Well, again, I think it comes down to commitment and goal setting. So typically what I'll try to do is I'll ask athletes that I'm working with, where do you want to be? Where do you want to be in 5 years, in 10 years? Most young kids that you talk to will tell you that they want to be a professional athlete. Well, okay, if you want to be a professional athlete, then I'll say, as I said, I can outline for you specifically in terms of your physical training and your physical preparation exactly what it is you need to do to get to that level, and also what type of time commitments are involved, what, you know, how much actual coaching and practice hours you need. And again, as Paulo said, what we're doing needs to be directly tied into what soccer coaches are doing. We need to be working together with soccer coaches, because our, as fitness coaches, what we're providing is a piece of the puzzle.
And it will not lead
to optimal athletic development if it's not also done in conjunction with proper coaching, proper technical and tactical development. You know
what Richard's alluding to, all too often our jobs are done away from the field. That's why strength and conditioning in many of our North American sports, those professionals are working in the gym, in the rehab center, in the pool, and not alongside the coach with providing meaningful information with regards to load. How does this exercise affect the way things are going this week, looking at preparation for the weekend game?
Your industry, sorry, Paul, yeah, go ahead, finish off your thought.
No, so like I was saying, that that has to be an ongoing process and not a service provided aside from what's happening day to day.
Yeah, that's a great point. Your industry, Paulo and Richard, has exploded in the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, where there is a lot of people out there that are even taking university courses to do what you're doing, and they have a passion and a drive to be where you two are at, to train with conviction, with passion, with authority. And what I'm hearing from you two is that the respect is not out there for the field that you guys are doing. It is there in certain aspects, but is not given enough, Richard. Why is that?
I think there isn't even necessarily enough of a knowledge or enough of a culture of exactly what a soccer fitness coach is and what the roles and responsibilities of a soccer fitness coach are. And I think that's partly because it's sort of a maybe a new concept in Canada. It's not a new concept in the rest of the world. but it's a new concept in Canada. And I think that, that's maybe a responsibility that people like Paulo and I have, that, you know, to educate people and to tell them, this is, you know, this is what needs to be, this is what the structure of a professional training environment needs to be. A coach needs to work alongside with a fitness coach in order to optimally develop an athlete.
Well, coaches who have experience elsewhere will easily open the doors to us and use our knowledge, help us shape the health and performance of each athlete that's in front of us. Like you said, our responsibility is to keep educating and keep doing a professional job. And the more professionals that we get into the game, we will be able to do a more holistic approach to our development.
So, Paulo, let me ask you this. Ages of 10, 15, and then ages of 20. Three different ages, okay? Different ages of the youth player.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go about training at the ages of 10? And then what do we change at 15? And then what do we start incorporating at age 20?
At 10, the most important thing is physical literacy. And I know Richard works a lot with this age group. I mean, at that point in time, it's the learning and the building blocks. And I'll let Richard talk about more about what he does.
Well, really the big focus at that age is about movement efficiency. So we want to make sure that people know how to move in a way that's efficient, both to conserve and maximize the amount of energy that you have, and also to move in a way that's going to prevent injuries and optimize performance. So if we can teach physical literacy or movement efficiency at a younger age, then we've done a good job providing a foundation for future athletic development. Okay. And that's a big component to what I'm doing.
Absolutely. So go to age 15 now. So that's basically the age of 10. Go to 15 and then go to 20. What do we do at age 15, Paulo, and then to 20?
At 15, that's when our training needs to become safe and effective. Safe because we need to set the parameters in a restricted manner that they don't overreach. Effective means we still need to do things that we're going to get progress. Okay, and as far as do we know where their maturation is, so can we start working on certain strength training? We know that we could work on speed at that point, no problem. You know, how much endurance training is appropriate for that age or that athlete. So the more we know about the athlete, the better we can proceed.
And I think, as Paulo alluded to, the understanding the what amount of load or what amount of overload do we need in order to actually produce improvements is very important, because that way we don't get into a situation where we're either not doing enough or doing too much. And that's very important to know that. So
that's a great point. You don't want to do too much, but you don't want to do too little. You want to have a happy medium, Richard. Guys, it's getting closer to the end here. Let's talk about today, going forward. Both of you guys are heavily involved in the university level, at the national level, at the provincial level. If there's a couple keys, a couple tips, Richard, we'll start with you, that you want to give out to the young boy, the young girl out there, to take from, what would you give them to take from?
I would say that to have a professional mentality and a professional attitude, a big component of that is being prepared. So you need to prepare yourself mentally, physically, and as well, as I said, technically and tactically, in order to become an elite athlete and to get yourself to the professional level. So people need to get educated, learn exactly what's required of them, what commitment's required in order to get themselves to the next level, and prepare themselves properly to do so.
Now, Paulo, you've been in Europe and you've trained with, if I'm not mistaken, in Italy, with a third division team, if I'm not mistaken.
With a fourth division club, yes.
Okay, and explain to me very quickly, their training methods, how different, or if they were different at all, compared to how you would train kids here?
Well, I work with the first team. So we worked with athletes that were 18 to 35. Some guys were at the end of their career, and some guys were just starting their career. We had a couple of players that actually went on to second and first division contracts the following year. So I've seen it all. I've seen it all there. And I mean, we actually had an interesting story there where one player came in from France from a second division club, and I sat down with him speaking the language and convinced him to stay with the club because he thought it was a couple steps back. But I mean, in Italy, I mean, it's very, very deep. And I said to him, listen, you do your time and I'm sure it'll pay off. And his dream was always to play for Milan, but he ended up playing against Milan. He didn't play for Milan. So
Look at that. Paolo Pacioni has a lot of different tools in his toolbox. He's not only a strength and conditioning guy, but he's also a consultant as well. That is great to hear. Paolo, Richard, before we let you go, two things very quickly. There's got to be some guys that you've trained have gone on to success. You've told me about a couple who now you look at on the TV. One guy that you mentioned to me, Nana Atakora. Who are some of the people that you still keep an eye on that are very proud that you helped train?
Yeah, Nana's a guy that I'm very proud of, and I had the privilege to work with him for several years from his back when he was as young as 14 years old, and all the way up through to getting him ready for TFC. There's been several different players that are currently in Division I schools in the States. The York University players, definitely both the men's and the women's. It's a great pleasure and a great honor for me to work with them, and definitely looking forward to building some more future success at that level and beyond.
And where can people get a hold of you, Richard, if they want to, you know, get a hold of you and bring their young son or daughter out to you, or maybe a team or two would like to get a hold of you? Where can they get a hold of you?
The best way to reach me is just to log on to my website. It's www.soccerfitness.ca.
That's great. Now, Paolo, you mentioned to me you were training a young man that went on to play for the national team at Trinidad and Tobago. Who was that?
His name was Denzel Theobald. Actually, he was an athlete of Rafael Carvajal and myself. And it was great to watch him play three 90-minute games at the World Cup in 2006.
That is great to hear. Paolo, keep up the great work for the CSA and the OSA. I see you out there all the time, hustling, talking, vocal, and passionate about what you do. Guys, enjoyed having you in here this morning here. And I really love listening to what you guys have to offer, because again, you come with conviction, with passion, and you really come across that people need to give your industry and the type of work you guys do more respect because of how important it is for that young athlete and that up and coming athlete as well.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.